I'm joined on the line by Brian Stoddart, whose fantastic new book, A Madras Miasma, is out now. Brian, how are you today?
Very well, thank you, Stuart.
That's good, that's very good. A Madras Miasma is amazing. I picked it up and read it and then thought I should have been in class. whoops, that was a good one to try and explain. Set in Madras in the 1920s, it's full of detail. It's beautifully crafted. How did you put this amazing book together?
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment, Stuart. I really appreciate that, as you would understand. I think, as some of the biographical detail at the back of the book says, all my original PhD work was on South India. And I was working on the period roughly between the wars, but on either side of it as well. And my main interest at that stage was really on the growth of nationalism in South India from in the 20s and the 30s. But I got very interested in what's broadly described as British India as well, and particularly on the way in which Britain was able to hang on to this massive country in terms of population and size. And then over the years, I mean, I've always been a great fan of crime fiction, and it just got to the point where I thought, look, I'd love to write some crime fiction, and it was obvious to start with something that I knew, because it's got a, there's an atmospheric about that period too, I think, that people find a little bit interesting. And I must say, I've been really delighted by the response, because a lot of people have had the same reaction that you have, I think, in that there's a blend of period detail in there with the crime fiction itself. So it was really a combination of interests and familiarity. And I think what I hope comes through in the book too is that Madras, now called Chennai, is a place that I really like, and I've seen it for a long time, and I just love the place, and I hope that something of that atmosphere comes out as well.
I was going to say, you must have had to have been there, because you couldn't get these little details just by research, just by out-of-a-book research. You'd have to be on the ground.
I mean, I spent all up, I suppose, over several years. I've lived in India for probably 6 or 7 years in total, and much of that was in the south, in Chennai and around about in Tamil Nadu and up in Andhra Pradesh. And I think it's what you say. You do get a different insight into the way in which these places work along with the book stuff. I mean, Some of the listeners may have heard of Harry Keating, H.R.F. Keating, who wrote the Inspector Goethe series a long time ago, 30 years or so. Harry never went to Mumbai, but he sort of captured a particular essence that I think for anyone who knows India, when you go back and read his stuff, it's very evocative, but there's just something that doesn't quite fit, if you know what I mean. So yes, there's a bit of familiarity in the way in which I approach Madras, I guess.
For a book set in the 1920s, it has a very modern feeling as well. It works both ways. You can relate to the characters in their 1920 setting, but if you put them down now, Superintendent. Now, I'm never going to get his name right. Is it Lefano?
Lefano, yeah.
Lefano. I told you I'd never get it right.
You did it perfectly. That's
okay.
Right. There are several variations, I think.
Yeah, I think he would be at home now, even. He is a very well-constructed and very well-rounded character, which is not something I get a lot in books lately. Usually, the writing I'm reading lately is how can I put this? Exceedingly one-dimensional, possibly because it's written by Chinese students. But Lefano is beautifully created. I cannot imagine that he just sprang fully formed from your imagination. You must have had to have sat down and thought, well, look, this is how policing worked then. This is how people work. Was it hard to put this guy together?
Oh, look, it's very kind again, Stuart. Thank you. This is going to sound terrible, but it wasn't perhaps quite as difficult as you imagine, and it's partly because of the background that I had and partly because of that, I suppose, working knowledge of the city that's there. And the two things come together this way, and there is a third which I'll get to, but the two things come together this way. I mean, I obviously know quite a lot about how things actually worked in the 1920s, and I worked around some of the personalities that I worked on because, amongst other things, I wrote a biography of an Indian civil servant who was a bit of a renegade. And I think people who read that book will find some aspects of that in Lefanu as well. But there were people in British India who thought beyond, as you would describe it, the one-dimensional in their context. They were thinking a lot about what was the future of India going to be after the 1920s. And there were already people looking at change, and I tried to construct Lefanu around that. And the context of that helps make it work, I think. And the other thing, the third dimension, I think, is that in some respects, a lot of the central sort of themes and whatever of crime fiction have a familiarity, whether they're set, say, in an historical context or a more modern one. For example, I've recently been reading Adrian McKinty's trilogy set in Northern Ireland, and reading that, I could see some familiarities between his character, Sean Duffy, and mine, with the same sorts of challenges and the same sorts of issues set in a different way. So I think in that sense there's a fortunate happenstance where the coincidence of those things actually did work reasonably well. Mm.
The other problem is that we are looking at all these things through very modern eyes, and we are likely to push our own personal experience over the top of them anyway. So, of course, he's going to feel like he didn't exist now. He was only written not very long ago, but I've got to stop thinking like my job. Brian, you've been a writer. This might be your first Inspector Lefanu book, but you have been a writer for, how can I put this nicely, a bloody long time.
A very long time, yes. Yeah.
You have a background in academia. You've actually been about as high up the chain you can get, the Vice-Chancellor and President of La Trobe University.
Yes.
What drew you to a life in academia? Was it because, like me, you don't like actually doing any hard work?
I have a variation on that. I grew up in rural New Zealand, and I didn't want to go into business. And at that stage, there weren't a lot of choices. And I'd been very fortunate that I had a couple of very good teachers at school, and I thought I'd become a school teacher, which I did at secondary school level for about a year and a half. But on the way through to that, I'd actually become attracted to India. And I was just, I suppose it was the exotic nature of it, the history that was so vastly different from that of New Zealand. And that set me off on that journey. And on the way through, I became interested in writing, perhaps not so much as an academic, as someone who had been fortunate enough to be informed as an academic but wanted to communicate with some other people. So that took me, there's a whole lot of twists and turns in this, but I ended up doing a lot of work on radio and for the press. I got involved in some of the early forms of the serious study of sports history. And that, again, took me back into the media and other things. And I was always interested in writing for wider audience isn't just the very strictly limited academic ones. So I got into public commentary, I suppose, that much overused term, public intellectual. But it was, for me, it was more about being able to take some of the knowledge that I'd been fortunate enough to get and try and translate that into wider audiences. And I think that's been a continuity through the writing that I've done, starting with all that non-fiction, and now in effect spreading into the crime fiction work, where a number of people have come back and said one of the things they enjoyed about the book was that they learned a lot about India and its evolution under the British. And that is also very encouraging, because it's obviously one of the stories that I was trying to tell.
Mm. Well, if I had the opportunity, I have to wave the Raj Quartet fleetingly under the noses of my students. And unfortunately, I teach British literature. If I had my way, I'd be handing them this and saying, look, you'll learn more out of this than you will out of the Raj Quartet in about 5 minutes, and it's not as cruel and nasty. But I don't think my boss would be very happy if I did that.
Oh, that's unfortunate, isn't it?
Well, they're a bit set in their ways. Now, Brian, you have a great job at the moment, though. You lecture on cruise ships. How do you get these gigs?
that was actually really interesting, because like most writers these days and other people, I spend a lot of time on email and the web and all the rest of it. And I got this invitation to go and do some work on one of the cruise ships. And I thought, to be quite honest, originally I thought it was a scam. And I did some checking and discovered this company was in fact legitimate. And I wrote back to them and said, look, how did you find me? And they said, well, we have people, they service a huge number of cruise ships because it's a vastly growing industry. And they said, we've got people who do nothing else but spend most of their time patrolling blog sites. And we've read a lot of the stuff that you've written, and we thought it would be the sort of thing that a number of our cruise customers would like. And so it ended up, I was on a cruise ship from Hong Kong through to Cape Town, talking on a whole range of things that were of interest to me that I've developed over the years around international relations and politics and antiques and popular culture and all sorts of things. And it was really interesting talking to the people on there. And among other things, a number of them wanted to talk about crime fiction, because they get the same thing about crime fiction that I do, which is, I mean, I describe myself as a crime and place writer, because to me the context and the evolution of the story is as important as the characters and the actual plot line, because that's the colour of the event and the way in which things work out. And it was interesting talking to a lot of the passengers on the cruise that I've done, that they feel about it the same way. So the cruise ship stuff has been very interesting, I must say.
I love that phrase, crime and place. That is a beautiful turn of phrase, and that fits Superintendent Lefano perfectly. This is the phrase that I wish I had invented to describe your book instead of waiting for you to say it. Now I just feel like I am a lesser light.
Well,
now I'm kidding.
Please feel free to use it.
I'm going to steal it. Don't worry about using it.
Please do. It's the sort of stuff that I like over a long time. I mean, I started, like everybody, you start with Chandler and Hammett and all the rest, and that is specific to a particular time and place. And then when you start reading a lot of other things, the tartan noir writers, say, on Edinburgh and Glasgow, and then you go to the more exotic locations, Barbara Nadal on Istanbul, Parker Bilal, whose two books set in Cairo, to me, are just fabulous pieces in this. And there's just so many of the rest of them as well. And that was one of the things that attracted me to Crime Wave Press, who published this book, because they wanted to have a focus on Asian crime fiction, which to me was perfect, because so much of what they're trying to do as well is really to convey the, you know, the actual sense of what some of these places are really like. And it's a great challenge, but it's also terrific fun.
They hit the nail on the head. They when Crime Wave publish a book, it actually ticks all the boxes for me. They are very good at selecting these books. They're picking books that other companies are going, oh, no, we don't think there's a huge market for this. And
yes.
I'm thinking, yes, there is. You are too narrowly focused on authors that you can recognise the name of. I just don't get it. Yeah. Anyway.
That's something about the, I suppose, what we would call the industry as well, isn't it, Stuart? The whole change in the way in which publishing operates. It's really fascinating to me to sit at crime fiction conferences now and listen to new authors who are being published by the mainstream houses. And the two things they tend to say is that, one, it takes a very long time for the books to come out. And the second is there's a fair degree of what I would call market intervention in the sort of book they actually end up publishing under their name.
Mm-hmm.
Crime Wave have really been a revelation in that, because they're switched into the new modes of production, if I can put it that way, where the books are getting, they're targeted to particular markets and in particular formats. And I think the Crime Wave authors, you know, we're allowed and even encouraged to write effectively the books that we want to write. Because, as you say, I think they select their authors on the basis of having something different to say. Whereas you go and talk to, you know, the agents and you talk to the mainstream publishers, there's a very, to me, a formulaic view of what it is that people will buy. And I think there's some intriguing processes going on in there, because some of the mainstream things that I see that are supposedly commercial, they don't particularly move me, I must say.
No. I spoke to an unnamed author recently who said, I was given a template for my next book and I'm moving publishing houses.
And there's a lot more of it about, I think, than people imagine. Like, you go to one of the more recent conferences I was at in the UK earlier this year, you know, the words of the moment are psychological thriller. Everybody's writing a psychological thriller because that's what the publishing houses are demanding. Now, some of them are terrific, but others of them, I think, to use your term, they're written to a template. And there's a, you know, somehow it just misses the mark.
Mm. But Christian Joylan Brennan Lefano, MC, does not miss the mark. Is he coming back?
I am in the very happy position of being able to say the new Lefano will be out at the end of November coming, so about 7 or 8 weeks away.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Can you give us a little bit, just a little soupçon, a little taste of what he might be up to?
Of course. He has another case in Madras, but the tentacles of the case actually spread a little bit further afield, including to Hong Kong and China.
Ooh.
And his relationship with his former housekeeper develops a little bit, as does his troubled relationship with his immediate superior. And he is still navigating some of the social niceties and difficulties of British India.
Mm. I can hardly wait.
Well, you don't have long to wait, Stuart. I'm just delighted it's coming out.
I'm going
to
lean on
quickly.
Tom this afternoon, actually. I'm not going to bloody wait. Tom, I need the new book now. All right, look, Brian, it has been absolutely wonderful talking to you today. I wish we had more time, but unfortunately, financial reasons dictate that we run to about 20 minutes.
Of course. Stuart, thank you for the opportunity. It's been terrific to talk, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
I reckon we can do that without even batting an eyelid. Brian, you are a lovely, lovely person, and thank you very much for taking time out of your holiday to speak to us today.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Stuart. Thank you.